stay tuned for Mystery Theater.
Come in. Welcome. I'm E.G. Marshall. Bleak, lonely, evil. Such are the moors of England, where even today one can go for mile on mile without sight of another house or another human soul. Where death-dealing quicksand bogs and mires wait to trap the unwary walker. Where many who enter are not seen again. And where some of those who are seen again are strangely changed. For example, Sandy and Jack Burton. Our mystery drama, The Executioner, was written especially for the Mystery Theater by George Lowther and stars Tony Roberts. It is sponsored in part by Anheuser-Busch Incorporated, brewers of Budweiser, and Sinoff, the sinus medicines. I'll be back shortly with Act One.
Way back in 1876, it was brewed and aged to deliver a taste, a smoothness, and a drinkability found in no other beer at any price. I'm talking about Budweiser. And it's still brewed that way today, with pride, without compromise, to be the king of beers. The largest selling beer in the history of the world, for one simple reason. That Beechwood-aged Budweiser taste. And that speaks for itself. Hear it talking?
When you say Bud, you say you care enough to only want the king of beers. There is no other one, there's only something less, because the king of beers is leading all the rest. When you say Budweiser,
you've said it all.
Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis.
Ma'am, what's for dinner? Hey, ma'am, what you got?
Whether you're eating in or cooking out, ShopRite's got the answer. Save on ShopRite smoked ham. Shank portion just 79 cents a pound. Butt portion 89 a pound. First cut chuck steak 69 cents a pound. Semi-boneless chuck roast $1.09 a pound. Large fresh pineapples 49 cents each. Philadelphia brand cream cheese 8-ounce package 39 cents. The ShopRite bag. It's a lot of savings. There's a ShopRite near you, so stop in soon.
She loves the family. She wants the best. She does all that she can do. She lets ShopRite do the rest. Hey, Ma, what's for dinner? ShopRite has the answer.
This week in New York Magazine, there's a special pullout on how to get into sky sailing, the exciting sport where you fly by yourself attached to a kite. We're New York Magazine. Fly us.
Few will deny, I'm sure, that weather and climate play a great part in our lives. To a large degree, affect our mood, our nerves. People in warm and sunny climates tend to take life more casually than those where the weather is cold and bleak. What I'm getting at is that one of the characters in the tale I bring you now is not a person, but a moor. Moor. The very sound of the word strikes a note of dread to the soul. Dread, but fascination, too. For believe me, there is a certain allure in evil, a compelling magnetism which some cannot withstand. Two such people were Sandy and Jack Burton.
Jack, how much further to Linton?
20, 30 miles, not sure.
We'll never make it by nightfall.
We may not make it at all. The road is running with water. I try to go faster than 5 miles or so, the engine gets wet and starts to die. The wiring is soaking wet.
That old farmer was right. We should never have taken the shortcut across the moor. He warned us.
But, honey, I wanted to see the moor. I've never been on a moor in all my life. There's a writer.
There's a writer who's supposed to be on vacation, resting and recuperating from a nervous breakdown.
No, no.
You promised me. On the plane over, you promised not a stroke of work till we got back from England. What's that?
It's wet wires. I better slow down a bit more.
But all you've been doing since we landed is take notes of this and notes of that. You filled I don't know how many notebooks.
Well, I am a writer, and it's sort of second nature to take notes. Yes, I keep hoping I'll hit on an idea that'll pay off for an article. Even better, a series of articles when we get back home.
All I wish is you'd just plain stop worrying when you ought to be resting. And you... Oh, Jack.
It looks like we've bought it, as our English cousins say.
You mean we're stuck?
I'm afraid I do. The water on the road's gotten deeper. It's practically a lake.
Well, what'll we do?
Let's see if we can find shelter for the night at that castle on the hill.
What castle and what hill?
That hill over there.
I see a hill. I don't see any...
It's shrouded in fog, but when the fog lifted for a second or two, 5 minutes ago... There. See?
You're right. There is a castle or it's a house or something.
You think you can make it that far?
Oh, I'll make it. Anything but spend the night out here in this awful, absolutely awful moor. Yes?
Sorry to trouble you, ma'am. My name's Jack Burton. This is my wife, Sandy. Our car broke down on the road below, and I'm afraid we need shelter for the night.
Not here.
But, ma'am...
I said not here.
Oh, now, just a minute.
Jack, don't argue. That man...
I see him, but big as he is... Well, never mind. But, ma'am, we're in a serious situation. Our car is stalled in what's practically become a lake. In common decency, you gotta let us come in.
Honey?
Jack, look out! That man...
Now, hold it, chum. All I'm asking... Hey, wait a minute. Get your hands off me!
Dunning, don't hurt him. Just put him out.
Put who out? In weather like this?
Never mind, Dunning. Too late.
Mrs. Drood, what's going on here? Who are these nice young people and why was Dunning putting them out?
Sir, our car is stalled on the road below. And with night coming on and all, we were hoping you could put us up until morning.
Well, of course we can. Come in, come in. Dunning, close the door. Permit me to introduce myself, Sir Leonard Hastings Brooke. And this is my home, Bodmoor Manor. My housekeeper, Mrs. Drood, with whom I shall have a few words later about her lack of hospitality. And this is Dunning, man of all work. He cannot speak. He's a mute, but he can hear well enough and carry out orders. And you, sir?
Jack Burton, and this is my wife, Sandra. We're Americans here on vacation. We were taking a shortcut across the moor to Linton.
Yes. You can fill me in on the particulars later. Right now, you both look like drowned rats. Very pretty rat in your case, Mrs. Burton. We must get you both into dry, warm clothes.
You're awfully kind. I can't thank you. And... What was that?
I beg your pardon?
I heard it. I thought I heard...
I heard it, too. Someone screamed.
Oh, just a trick of the wind, that's all.
The wind?
Yes. Howling about these old manor houses, it can sometimes make the strangest and most nerve-wracking noises. Well, I shall look forward to seeing you again at dinner.
If you'll come with me, please.
Oh, yes. Thank you, Mrs. Drood. Jack, that wasn't the wind. That was a scream.
It sure sounded like it.
Oh, Jack. Jack, let's leave.
And go where, Sandy? Where?
And so you see, you're not only dining in what was called the Great Hall in Elizabethan times, but at the very table graced by Her Majesty, the Virgin Queen herself.
Then, if I follow you, Sir Leonard, Bodmoor Manor was owned by Elizabeth the First?
Her Majesty Elizabeth the First. Her Sovereign Majesty.
Oh, well, yes, of course.
Did she use it for any special purpose?
She? Her Majesty used it as temporary quarters while one castle or another was being renovated.
How did it come into your family, Sir Leonard?
Well, it was a gift from Her Majesty to the first Sir Leonard Hastings Brooke when he was knighted in 1584.
For performing some worthwhile service, I'm sure.
Worthwhile? Special might be a better word, or distinctive, or peculiar.
Peculiar?
My ancestor, the first Sir Leonard, was special executioner to Her Majesty.
Executioner?
head chopper, you might say. Little family joke.
Oh.
And many of his victims, I suppose, I should say Her Majesty's victims, were dispatched right here at Bodmore.
I thought that most, if not all, executions took place at the Tower of London.
Oh, most of them did. Most of them did, especially when a public beheading was considered useful. But there were times, too, when Elizabeth found it politic to remove certain malcontents, hotheads, other threats to her power in secret. And here at Bodmore Manor was where those executions were carried out.
Oh, what scream! There it is again!
Now, that was a scream, Sir Leonard. Not the wind playing tricks. It was a scream, wasn't it?
I didn't want to admit it the first time. Indeed, Mr. Burton, I hoped it was nothing more than the wind, but since you and your wife have heard it a second time...
You heard it too, didn't you? You all heard it.
Oh, no. Only those on whom the curse of Bodmore is about to fall ever hear it. It's the scream of someone about to be beheaded just before the axe falls.
You didn't hear that scream?
Oh, no.
Mrs. Drood?
I didn't want you to stay here.
The curse of Bodmore, what happens?
Nothing, if you follow orders.
What orders?
There is a room, the room at the far east end of the corridor where your own bedroom is, that you must never go into.
Okay, but why not?
Do not go into it, that's all I tell you. The room is locked, but there have been those who forced the lock and came to a sorry end. I warn you, don't try to enter that room.
What's in the room, Sir Leonard?
Believe me, Mr. Burton, it's best you not know.
Can it be that horrible?
Oh, my dear, horrible to you is but a word. On my 21st birthday, my father took me to that room and showed what is in it, and horrible became to me actuality. I beg you, as you value your sanity, as you value your life, stay out of that room.
Jack?
Here, honey, by the window.
What are you doing over there? Why aren't you in bed?
Oh, just looking out at the moor, thinking.
The rain stopped, and there's a moon.
Yeah, with black clouds scudding across it.
What have you been thinking about?
Yeah, not thinking, exactly. Wondering's more like it. Wondering about this whole freaked-out setup.
Sir Leonard and Mrs. Drood?
I'm wondering, could I do an article if I can find the right handle? Did we hear that scream? Really hear it? Or was it just the wind?
Well, Sir Leonard said...
I know, but... Well, was he maybe just taking advantage of the circumstances, us thinking we'd heard a scream?
But why would he?
I don't know. That's what I've been sitting here trying to figure out. All I can come up with is that... He's playing some kind of childish game.
He doesn't act like a child.
No, but...
Come on to bed.
No. You go on and on. I'll sit up for a while yet.
Jack, what are you up to?
Up to? Me?
That room at the end of the corridor.
Now, whatever gave you the idea that I would...
Jack!
Honey... It would make one terrific article. If there is anything in that room, something really horrifying or whatever, or even if there isn't, the experience we're having here right now, I mean, the car stalling, Bodmore Manor being Liz the One's private execution place, the curse, the whole bit. I mean, I can sell it like that when we get back.
You are not supposed to be working. Dr. Delmar warned you.
Oh, and sent me his bill at the same time. Now, you don't pay that kind of bill and a few others that are bugging me by resting.
All right. Let's go.
Well, you don't have to go.
I have to. Now, question. Sir Leonard said the room is locked. How do you propose to open it?
Simple. You've forgotten that article I did on safecrackers and lockpickers.
You're right. I had forgotten. All right, if you're ready.
Come on. Well? Coming?
Just the sight of that long corridor. All those suits of armor lining the walls.
Look, go back to bed and I'll...
No, no. Go ahead. I'm with you. Yes.
Yeah, it's something, isn't it? A big glass case filled with clothes worn in the 16th century, I guess.
There's no need to guess. Look at that one there. If that wasn't worn by Elizabeth I, the jeweled high stand-up collar, flounced sleeves sewn with semi-precious stones. Oh, Jack, Elizabeth herself wore that.
Yeah, I guess she did. But look, it's the inside of that room down there that I want to get... What's that?
I don't know. I thought I heard...
It sounds like someone's...
Coming from the end of the corridor. Jack! Jack, look!
What? Where?
There! Walking through the patch of moonlight! Walking towards us!
No! Oh, no!
What is it that Sandy and Jack see? Wish I could tell you. Matter of fact, I could, but there's a place for everything, and everything in its place, I say. I'll return shortly for Act Two.
I want that sinus medicine.
Headache tablets?
No, sinus medicine helps the headache and the pressure.
Oh, you mean sign-off.
Exactly.
Exactly right. When sinus flares up with congestion and pain, insist on sign-off tablets. Sign-off delivers a full dose of pure aspirin plus a sinus drainer. Sign-off helps sinus pain while you drain. Use only as directed.
S-I-N-E-O-F-F.
Sign-off.
Exactly.
Sign-off. The sinus medicines in the bright red box.
If you enjoy wine with your meals, here's something you should know about wine before meals.
Before, that's the time to say I'll have a glass of Before a meal by day or night, Duvernay is always right. Before, yeah, before. It's the time before for Duvernay.
Most wines go with your meals, but Duvernay goes before. Think of it as an appetizer, a wine that's right for your appetite. Before lunch, before dinner at cocktail time, before whatever you've got cooking. The distinctive taste of Duvernay before makes what comes after that much better. Duvernay. It all started in France, of course. Product of USA, Duvernay Company, New York, New York.
Now we're in the Burtons' room at Bodmore Manor. It's a little past 3 in the morning. And as you can see, Jack is trying to revive Sandy, who fainted, I guess. But come, stand with me here by the window for a moment and look out across the great mysterious moor. Silent. Silent as a grave in moonlight. Brooding. Waiting. For what? For whom?
Come on, Sandy. Come on. Snap out of it, honey.
Jack. What?
Here, drink this.
Oh, Jack. I fainted.
I don't blame you.
Oh. Gruesome. Horrible. I've never seen anything like it. If I really did see it.
You saw it. We both saw it. An executioner, a headsman, black hood, black doublet and hose, and the axe. Gleaming silver in the moonlight with... blood, ruby red, dripping from it.
And coming straight toward us down that corridor out there. Oh, what happened after I fainted?
He vanished.
Vanished?
Or maybe he just slipped away into the shadows.
But, Jack, was it a ghost, do you think?
I don't know. It could be we...
Oh, Jack!
Easy. Who's there?
Mrs. Drood.
Oh, that awful woman with her jet black hair pulled back and that long white face.
Would you open the door, please?
Yes. Yes, of course. Yes?
May I come in?
Thank
you. Are you all right now, Mrs. Burton?
Oh, yes. How did you know I wasn't all right?
Nothing goes on in this house. I don't know. I know the dangers that lurk here. The mind-shattering things that can happen. That's why I've come to warn you again.
Again?
Sir Leonard warned you at dinner. Warned you to stay away from that room at the end of the corridor. I knew, even as he warned you, that he was arousing your curiosity. That at the first opportunity you try to find out what lies behind that locked door. That's what you did, didn't you?
Yes.
Take care. Don't do it again. If you do, you may not leave Bodmore Manor alive.
We are in danger of death?
Nothing less.
I don't understand.
No need to understand.
But the...
You saw the headsman, did you not? The headsman with his axe dripping blood?
Yes.
Count yourselves fortunate that you only saw him. That you still bear your heads on your shoulders.
Still... Are you saying there's a murderer in this house?
Am I telling you something you didn't already know? Didn't already feel? Haven't you felt its loathsome presence?
Who? What are you talking about, Mrs. Drood?
The moor. The moor, child. It more than surrounds this old manor house. This house that reeks of blood. Its poisonous fog slipping under doors, through cracks. Smell it. The dampness, clammy and moldering as the grave. Bolt your door, and do not leave this room till I come for you in the morning. Under no circumstances, leave it.
The dame is spaced out. A yo-yo.
Bolt the door.
Okay. But if she thinks she can keep me from finding out what's in that room...
She doesn't have to.
What?
I'm keeping you from that room. I'm keeping you in this room until morning.
Oh, Sir Leonard.
I've been waiting for you, Mrs. Drood. What are you doing out of your quarters at nearly 4 in the morning?
What are you doing in my quarters at nearly 4 in the morning?
The Queen has sent word that she wishes to be present at the next execution. Her chambers must be put in readiness and all else required for her comfort. See to it.
Of course.
I've already instructed Dunning as to the axe. I want it sword blade sharp.
It will be. You can depend on Dunning.
What troubles me is, can I depend on you, Mrs. Drood?
Have I ever given cause for doubt, Sir Leonard?
Not until now. Take heed, woman. Her Sovereign Majesty, Elizabeth Regina, demands unswerving loyalty of her subjects. I warn you, try no more to save another's head, lest your own be forfeit. Well... Is your car, Burton, none the worse for wear, I should think?
Yeah, if the wires have dried out, Sir Leonard.
See if it will start, Jack.
Right on.
We figure Linton to be about 30 miles away, Sir Leonard, according to our map.
Oh, 30, give or take a few. You should be there in an hour.
Oh, less than that. 30 miles?
It's more like 60 on this road, Mrs. Burton. I say, Burton, your car sounds a bit sick.
It certainly doesn't sound good. I'm going to have a look under the hood.
The hood?
Oh, the bonnet. I can't find anything wrong under the bonnet. I'll give her another try.
You know, Mrs. Burton, I'm rather hoping your husband won't get the car started.
Why?
I lead rather a lonely existence out here, and I shall be sorry to see you go. More than delighted to have you stay, you know.
Well, that's awfully kind of you, Sir Leonard. I wish we could, but we do have a schedule to keep to. In fact, we'd better. We're booked on a flight out of Heathrow next Monday.
It's no go. I mean, she just won't start, and there's no sense in wearing down a battery. These wires have got to dry out.
Well, schedule or no schedule, Mrs. Burton, looks as if I'll have the pleasure of your company at least through luncheon. And if my stars are right, perhaps through dinner, too.
Well, it seems that way.
I'll hurry on up to the house and tell Mrs. Drood she'll have preparations to make. You two can saunter along at your leisure. Enjoy the morning.
All right, Jack. Level.
Level?
What did you do to the car?
Me? To the car? What do you...
I know you, husband mine. I know you all too well. You're going to find out what's in that room if it's the last thing you do.
Sandy, I have to. I mean, there's something really hairy going on here, and I'm going to get to the bottom of it, because if I don't, no editor will buy the article I intend to write.
I don't care whether the editor...
I do. I've been out of circulation too long. Lord knows how many contracts I've lost, and heaven knows we could use the dough. Now, I've got a hot article in the palm of my hand, Sandy, and I mean to play it for all it's worth. Now, no more talk. That's the end of it.
I hope you're right.
What?
I hope it isn't just the beginning. The beginning of something I'd rather not think about.
Mrs. Burton, I saw you sitting out here on the terrace. Brought you a cup of tea.
Thank you, Mrs. Drood. How very thoughtful of you.
Not at all. Sir Leonard tells me your husband couldn't get the car started and you'll be spending the night with us.
Yes.
Well, if you must, you must. Can I get you anything else?
Oh, thank you, no. The tea's enough.
In that case, I'll...
Mrs. Drood?
Yes.
What you said last night, in the middle of the night... About the moor. What exactly did you mean?
If you need ask the question, I cannot answer.
I don't understand.
Some things in life can't be put into words. There are things. Things of the spirit. Beyond words. Look out at the moor now. With the sun all rose and gold, setting in the west. What does it look like to you? What feelings does it bring to you?
Why, it looks quiet, beautiful, serene, lovely.
Yes, but within the hour, when the sun is gone, and the mists begin to rise from the boglands, and the moonlight plays strange tricks, it will be anything but quiet and beautiful and serene. It will be pure evil. Mrs. Burton, I strongly suspect that if your husband wanted to, he could get your car started. Take my advice. Persuade him to do so. And then leave Bodmore Manor. Leave as quickly as ever you can.
Hey, Levin. Now's as good a time as any, I guess.
If I could only make you listen to reason.
I am listening to reason, but mine, Sandy, not yours. Now, I'm the one in this family who has to make the bread.
Oh, you don't think I'm going to let you go there alone?
I would rather. If you hadn't fainted last night, I might have found out then what's going on here.
Don't worry, I won't faint. Not this time.
No. No, I can't be sure of that, Sandy, and I've got to find... What is that?
Drums. Sounds like muffled drums.
Muffled drums?
Yes, I've read somewhere that they were used just before someone was executed, beheaded. Elizabethan times, I mean.
Let's go. Jack, that sound is coming from the other end of the corridor, from that room. Whatever's going on, now is the time to see what it is. Come on. Now, quiet. Try not to make any noise.
This corridor. It's so dark. So full of shadows. Smells.
It's coming from that room, all right. The drums.
Shh.
Listen, what's that?
It's voices.
I know, but... Sandy, the door, look. It's ajar. Thin crack of light, you can see it.
Yes.
I'm going to see if I can open it quietly.
If you have no last words, place your head on the block.
Please accept the small bag of gold pieces, executioner. Dispatch me quickly, I beg you.
It shall be done. There now, your head. Place it on the block so it lieth properly.
Yes.
Jack, look. A beheading. Woman with her head on the block.
When I stretch out my hands.
The executioner.
That will be my signal for you to strike.
Axe raised.
Now.
He strikes.
Oh. Head. Head. I'm rolling around on the floor. Oh, Jack, you... Oh.
What's that? That's how... What? Master Dunning, we are observed. That man standing in the door. Seize him.
No. No, wait. Now, listen.
Seize him, Master Dunning. Seize him. And bring him to the block.
I don't want you to worry. Jack and Sandy Burton are going to come out of this all right. What intrigues me, and should intrigue you, is not that they will escape, but how will they escape the headman's axe? The truth is that if it hadn't been for some quick thinking on Sandy's part, some of the quickest thinking on record, well, back in a minute for Act Three.
There is a name for an automobile which manages to combine great luxury with great roadability. It is called Cordoba. Cordoba, the new small Chrysler. To visualize Cordoba is to see an automobile of dignity, of simplicity, uncluttered by fashion. To touch Cordoba is to feel soft contour seats, available even in fine Corinthian leather. But to experience Cordoba is to control the road, to approach both curve and straightaway with marked assurance. There is a word for an automobile combining luxury with such roadability. It is called character. The very definition of a most surprisingly affordable automobile called Cordoba, the new small Chrysler.
In a manor house that dates back to Elizabethan times, a frightful scene is taking place. A beheading. Ignoring the orders of Sir Leonard Hastings Brooke, owner of Bodmore Manor, and the warnings of Mrs. Drood, Jack and Sandy Burton dared to open the door of that forbidden room. To their horror, for on the very moment of opening it, they saw the great axe of a headsman fall and cleave the head from the body of its victim.
That man standing in the door. Seize him, Dunning. Seize him and bring him to the block.
No. Stay your hand, Dunning.
Mistress Drood, you dare countermand an order I have given?
Nay, Sir Leonard. I dare but entreat that you give a moment's thought to what you are about to do.
Dunning, fetch him here.
Oh. I say hold.
You forget yourself, mistress.
Nay, sir, you forget who I am.
Who are you, then?
Minerva Drood, First Lady in Waiting to Her Majesty. I represent the Queen in her absence, and I have the right to give orders as she might do were she here.
Well, it's the first time I've ever heard of such a right.
Your ignorance, sir, will not protect you from Her Majesty's wrath should you dare take my entreatment lightly.
But there stands Sir Jonathan Burton, a traitor to England and to Her Sovereign Majesty, if ever one lived.
Jack, he's pointing at you.
Not proven.
Not proven?
He has not even been put to the question.
Yes, but I thought... Well, never mind. I shall look into this at once. Come, Dunning. We must consult the records. You, Mistress Drood, remain here with the prisoners.
But, Sir Leonard...
Do as I bid you, madam. Dunning, come.
Mrs. Drood, what in heaven's name is this all about?
Use your eyes, Mr. Burton, and I think you'll have the answer for yourself.
Jack, that figure kneeling at the block, it's...
A dummy. As you can see, a storefront mannequin dressed in Elizabethan clothes. The head, just a dummy's head.
The executioner, the headsman in the long black hood. That was Sir Leonard?
Yes.
Is he crazy?
Again, yes.
Oh, good Lord!
Nothing to be alarmed about, Mrs. Burton. In any case, not until now. But I'm afraid he's begun to take a turn for the worse.
Yeah, but what's just happened here? I don't get it.
Let me explain. Bodmore Manor was, as Sir Leonard told you at dinner last night, a secret place of execution used by Elizabeth I. Sir Leonard, of course, knew this when he inherited the estate on his 21st birthday. You see, he had never been what you might call mentally stable. Learning he was the descendant of a headsman was all it took to send him over the edge.
He's harmless, you said?
Yes, or has been till now. Until now, when these seizures came on him, about every 3 months or so, we put on the little act you just saw. I would pretend that an order of execution had come from Elizabeth. Sir Leonard would get dressed in the headsman's outfit, the original, by the way. And we'd go through this mock beheading, even to the sound of muffled drums, recorded on tape, incidentally.
Good heavens!
Yes, it's all rather mad and ghastly, but harmless. Till now. Now I can't be sure. But I think his mania has begun to make more violent demands on him.
In other words, he...
Beheading a dummy doesn't seem to satisfy him anymore. He remains restless, unsatisfied. I don't like to think this, but I'm beginning to fear that he... He's returned. Sir Leonard.
I am in your debt, good mistress. There is nothing in the records to indicate that Sir Jonathan has been put to the question.
You see?
And so we must put him to the question. Master Dunning is at this moment preparing the Star Chamber.
A Star Chamber trial?
Is that not what Her Majesty would wish?
I suppose so.
As for you, Sir Jonathan, found guilty or not guilty, you will at least have the comfort of knowing you were accorded the highest honor of trial in Her Majesty's own tribunal. Come, sir, to the Star Chamber. Is it not true that you, Sir Jonathan, allied yourself with my Lord Essex in his abortive attempt to seize the reins of government? The attempt which cost him his head?
Not me, Your Honor.
Oh, you laugh, sir.
In God's name, be serious.
And address me as, what was it? Your Honor? Well, either you will show proper respect to this court, sir, or it will go hard with you.
Now look, Sir Leonard...
Be serious, and it's my lord,
Jack.
My lord, I didn't mean to upset you, and I'm sorry. It won't happen again.
Well, you see to it. You deny any allegiance to my lord Essex?
I do, your, my lord.
And what of your association with Sir Mortimer Shawcross?
Sir Mortimer Shawcross? I've never heard of him.
Ho, 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 ho. You've never heard of Sir Mortimer Shawcross? Why, you serious man, or are you again showing contempt for this court?
My lord, I assure you...
This court has heard enough. I pronounce you guilty.
Well, okay. I'm guilty.
And such being the findings of this Star Chamber, you are hereby sentenced to be executed at dawn tomorrow morning. Dunning! Take the prisoner to the place of execution there to wait the headman's axe at dawn. I shall retire to rest until that time.
Look, wait a minute, Dunning. Come on, Dunning, no rough stuff. Play acting is play acting. This is going too far.
This is Drew.
Warned him it isn't play acting anymore.
Look, if it isn't play acting, damn it, Dunning, let go of me. What is this?
The real thing, you foolish man, the real thing.
Lady Sandra will remain here while Sir Jonathan's execution is carried out. Within, I assure you, the next hour.
I beg you, entreat you.
Beg not, entreat not. It will gather you no recompense from me.
Oh, Mrs. Drood, what are we to do? What am I to do?
Keep our heads about us to begin with. Sir Leonard, poor man, has gone completely insane. No question of it now. This time it won't be a store mannequin he beheads. It'll be the real thing.
Jack!
If only he'd listened to me, left well enough alone.
Well, he didn't. That's beside the point now. The point is we've got to save him.
How? We're no match for him and Dunning, even if we could get out of here.
Oh, we can get out. That's no trick.
What?
I read an article of Jack's some years ago on safe cracking and lock picking, that sort of thing. That bolt on the doors will be a piece of cake with a charge card.
A charge card?
I think I can slip that bolt with one of my plastic charge cards. But then what do we do?
Cross that bridge when we come to it. Well,
it's coming. The bolt is moving, but I...
You've been almost an hour at it, and you said it would be simple.
I also said I'd only read Jack's article. I never tried it out. The bolt's slipping. We'll get this door open all right.
The drums. The muffled drums. Mrs. Burton, I can tell you, you have 10 minutes. 10 minutes before that axe falls.
Now, look. Look, you two, this joke has gone far enough. Dunning, take it easy, will you? The straps are biting into me.
Listen not to him, Dunning. Bind him tightly, tightly.
You're crazy, Sir Leonard. You have gone stark raving mad.
No, Sir Jonathan.
My name is Jack. Jack Burton. I am an American, a writer. I am...
You are a traitor, sir. And as such, you shall die. Good, Dunning, good. Bring him to the block.
To the block?
Sir Leonard. Salamand, open this door.
Who knocks?
Miss Drood.
Mistress Drood.
Not Mistress Drood. Mrs., in heaven's name, come to your senses. Don't you realize what you're doing?
Sandy, save me. They bound me with straps. They're laying my head on the block.
Lord,
this nut, he's pulling that black hood over his head.
Mrs. Drood, he's going to kill Jack. That madman is going to chop off my husband's head if we don't stop it. We've got to stop it.
How? Tell me how.
I don't know. I don't know. Wait. The costumes. Mrs. Drood, the costumes.
Costumes?
In the glass case. Queen Elizabeth's gown, the one with the high neck and the jewels.
What of it?
Get it.
I can't. The glass cases are locked.
We'll break the... Oh, never mind. I will.
Help me, please. Please, help me.
What are you doing? What good can those costumes...
Stop talking and help me get this on. Quick, Mrs. Drood, quick.
Help me. Sandy, help. Dunning, don't let him do this. He's crazy. Can't you see that? He's gone right out of his head. Dunning! Sandy! Mrs. Drood! Help me!
Open up! I, Elizabeth of England, call on you to open this door.
What was that?
You hear me, Sir Leonard? It is your queen who speaks. Open this door!
Dunning! It is Her Majesty. She's here. Open the door, man. Open it! Your Majesty. Your gracious Majesty.
What find I here? What knavery is this?
Well, Your Majesty...
Put down that axe this instant. Put it down, I say. Or your own head shall fall beneath it. Put it down.
Yes, yes. Yes, of course, Your Majesty. I wished only to obey Your Majesty, to do my duty, to send from this world a traitor who threatened
your... Traitor? Sir Jonathan Burton, a traitor? Are you mad? I have no more loyal subject, no dearer friend than this man whose life you would have taken. Fool, leave at once, be gone.
But Your Majesty...
Go!
I go. I go.
Sandy, you saved my life. But that costume...
It's the one in the glass case, Jack. The one Elizabeth herself wore. And it suddenly struck me. No, God gave me the idea that only Elizabeth herself could stop Sir Leonard. It was as simple as that.
Simple, perhaps. Brilliant, definitely. Mr. Burton, your wife has told me that you are a most accomplished writer, but somewhat inclined to have things your way. May I give you a word of advice?
Right now, I'll take anything.
Have things your way if you must, but listen to others, especially your charming and decidedly practical wife. A bit more than you have in the past. Otherwise...
Otherwise? Otherwise what, Mrs. Drood?
You may indeed lose your head.
A strange story? Yes. Incredible? Definitely. True? Well, I can personally vouch for its authenticity. How? Now what have I got myself into? The truth is that before I became an actor, I was a writer. No, no, wait a moment. I didn't say I was Jack Burton. I didn't say that at all. I'll be back shortly.
There's a happy sound around New York these nights. That sound is the music of Cy Oliver and his orchestra playing for dancing at the famous Rainbow Room, high atop Rockefeller Center on the 65th floor. The new policy at this beautiful restaurant combines dancing and dining in what has to be the best entertainment value in New York. There's an a la carte dinner and after-theater menu that's prepared and served with Rainbow Room style and quality, but most reasonably priced. And the Rainbow Room has no cover or music charge, just an easy $10 minimum per person, which applies to food and drink. It's the most beautiful room in New York with the most spectacular view of the city. Call the Rainbow Room for reservations at 212-PL7-9090. That's area code 212-PL7-9090. And give yourself a memorable evening across the hall at the Rainbow Grill, two generations of Brubecks featuring Dave Brubeck and the Darius Brubeck Ensemble perform for you twice nightly through May 31st.
All right, then. The truth will out. I was Jack Burton. Pen name. Real name, well, you know it. No matter. Important thing, you enjoyed my story. I hope you did, anyhow. And another important thing, very important to me, I've still got my head. I do, don't I? Our cast included Tony Roberts, Marion Seldes, Jacqueline Brooks, and Arnold Moss. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown.
Radio Mystery Theater was sponsored in part by Sinoff, the sinus medicines, and Anheuser-Busch Incorporated, brewers of Budweiser.
This is E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre. Until next time, pleasant dreams.
Tonight's WOR Mystery Theater was also brought to you in part by ShopRite Supermarkets, where you get a lot more for a little less, and by Dubonnet, a wine to go before your meal, made to make what comes after better. The preceding program was furnished by CBS Radio. This is WOR New York at the time signal 8 o'clock. Here's John Scott with the news. For a bulletin on the New York City budget crisis, here's WOR's Lester Smith. Thank you, Lester. Next regular news on WOR at 8 o'clock with John Scott. And now here's Fulton Lewis.
I'm Fulton Lewis in the Mutual Broadcasting System studios in Washington, D.C. My commentary after this.
Miss Grimble?
Yes.
Welcome to Martin Paint.
Thank you.
Since this is your first day, yes, I thought I'd help you get started.
Oh, good.
This is your switchboard.
Oh, I recognized it right away.
Ah, good.
Oh, this is really a big place.
Yeah, well, the Martin home decorating centers are quite extensive.
My.
Oh, there's your first call.
Mm. Good morning, Martin Paints. No, I'm sorry.
What was that?
Wall covering.
Oh, we have wall coverings.
Oh.
Oh, over 1,600 patterns.
Really?
And floor coverings, all the national brands.
My.
So be careful.
Good morning, Martin Paints, floor covering and wall covering. No, I'm sorry.
Yeah, what was that?
Decorative lumber.
Oh, Miss Grimble, look around you. What do you see?
Decorative lumber.
That's right. This is a complete home decorating center.
Oh.
Floor coverings, wall coverings, lighting, ceiling tiles, wall tiles, cork tiles, mirror tiles, lighting fixtures, dimmers, bulbs, bathroom accessories.
But I can't say all that.
Well, do the best you can.
Good morning, Martin's Home Decorating Center. It ain't just paint.
Tomorrow, the president embarks on his first European mission since taking office. His aim will be to reassure our allies of firm American support. He will fly first to Brussels, Belgium, where he will join Secretary of State Kissinger for a two-day NATO summit meeting. While in Brussels, the president plans individual meetings with leaders of all 14 member nations of the alliance. French President Valéry Giscard d'Estaing does not plan to attend the summit, but he does plan to meet with President Ford in the Belgian capital. Mr. Ford wants to give fresh assurances to the Western European leaders that they can continue to count on the firmness of U.S. commitments despite U.S. defeats in Indochina. The president will move on to Madrid next Saturday for meetings with General Franco and other Spanish leaders. The president said last week that he would welcome a method of giving Spain a larger role in European defense planning, although a number of NATO allies vigorously oppose any move to install Spain in the alliance on a formal basis. The president and the Spaniards are also going to talk about renewing agreements that permit the United States to operate air and sea bases in Spain. From there, the president flies to Salzburg, Austria, next Sunday for meetings on the Middle East with President Anwar Sadat of Egypt. He hopes that his sessions with Sadat there and the ones later in June in Washington with Premier Rabin of Israel are going to lead to progress toward a Middle East settlement. Then Mr. Ford is going to wind up his journey in Rome on June 3rd with meetings with Italian officials and, of course, with Pope Paul VI. He will return to the White House in early morning of June 4th, later that same morning to go to the U.S. Military Academy at West Point, New York, where the president will be the morning's commencement speaker. In Brussels, the president's rounds of conferences are going to include Portugal's prime minister. Both Mr. Ford and Kissinger have openly questioned whether Portugal should remain in NATO if the Portuguese government continues moving to the left. Mr. Ford also will confer with the premiers of Greece and Turkey. They will try to discuss the U.S. interest in a settlement to the Cyprus issue. Today, though, the president was preparing to unveil his next step in his energy program, amid strong indications that it's going to include a second $1 tariff on each barrel of imported oil. You can hear the president's speech at 8:30 p.m. That's Washington time. He was phoning key members of Congress late this afternoon to inform them of his proposals. The statement is expected to be critical of the Congress for failing to take action on an energy program, which the president says is critically needed to reduce America's dependence on foreign supplies of oil. Already this afternoon, the White House was beginning to take some formal pot shots at the Congress for its inaction on the energy issue. Presidential Press Secretary Ron Nessen said that the president is seriously irked that Congress has not moved more quickly on an energy bill, specifically the energy bill that President Ford submitted way back last January 15th. That legislative proposal contained as its most important features increasing tariffs on foreign oil and a gradual phase-out of price controls on domestic crude. Administration sources were saying today that the president is likely to take major action in both of these areas tonight. Another $1 a barrel increase on imported oil would add about 1.5 cents to each gallon of gasoline sold to American consumers. Eventually, it would lead to an increase in the price of all petroleum-based products. In Paris today, Secretary of State Kissinger said that the action the president is going to announce tonight is going to help reduce U.S. consumption of imported oil. He said it would reduce it by 1.2 million barrels a day by the end of 1977. Secretary Nessen said that an energy bill pending in the House of Representatives now is inadequate in the president's view. The president, in the absence of immediate action by the Congress, imposed a $1 a barrel tariff on oil imports back on February 1st. He said he would make two other dollar a barrel increases at the beginning of March and April unless Congress legislated a comprehensive program to conserve energy and to reduce dependency on foreign oil. Mr. Ford agreed, though, to postpone the second and third fee increases to give the Congress time to come up with a program of its own. However, the Congress recessed last week for the Memorial Day holiday without taking any action. The last time the president delayed the additional tariff, he had given the Congress until June 1st to show that it was making progress. The price of about two-thirds of all U.S.-produced oil is limited to $5.25 a barrel.
The remaining one-third can be sold at the world market price, which currently is about $10.50 or $11 per barrel. The proposal that is being considered by the president calls for gradual removal of controls on domestic oil prices over a two-year period, which administration officials say would lessen the immediate impact on consumers. Administration officials say that there is a certain urgency of obtaining some sort of energy program because they expect the cartel of oil exporting countries to increase their petroleum prices some 10 to 15% by the end of this summer, a move which they said would probably add 1 or 2 cents to the price of a gallon of gasoline. Oil imports have fluctuated wildly this year in response to the president's imposition of the first dollar per barrel tariff back on February 1st. The Commerce Department was reporting today that they jumped by 69% in April to 201 million barrels. Oil imports hit a record 285 million barrel level in January, as importers were apparently rushing to beat the tariff deadline. Imports then dropped in February and in March. But now that those swings are past, the average amount of oil imported over the first 4 months of this year is about equal to the final 4 months of last year. What has happened to domestic energy since October of 1973, the date of the Arab imposition of an oil embargo against the United States? Oil prices are up, and it seems that we are using more oil, and we're importing more, too. As the president was preparing to disclose the next step in his energy plan to cut oil consumption tonight, there have been these other developments. Energy usage seems to be creeping up again. The American Petroleum Institute saying today that in January, the last month for which figures are available, Americans used just under 18 million barrels of oil per day. A year earlier, when the oil embargo curtailed supplies, Americans were using about 17.3 million barrels per day. That's an increase of about 4%. Overall energy usage in the United States declined in 1974 on an annual basis, partially because of sharp curtailment of use during the embargo and in the period just after its end. The president said he wanted to cut consumption by 1 million barrels per day. From the Mutual Studios in Washington, I'm Fulton Lewis, and that's the top of the news as it looks from here.
Your Chrysler Plymouth dealer would like to announce some good news. Chrysler is back with a rebate. And here's some more good news. Your Chrysler Plymouth dealer not only has a great new rebate, he's also got the cars that are number one in most of the things you want most in a compact. Take gas mileage. According to the EPA's buyer guide, Duster and Valiant 6s got better gas mileage than the most popular 6s offered by Chrysler's major competitors. And room? Well, according to Automotive Industry's Roominess Index, Valiant 4-doors are the roomiest in their class. And now, for a limited time only, buy or lease any 75 Valiant Duster or Scamp, and Chrysler will give you back $200. And that's after you've made your best deal with your dealer. But an offer this good has to be limited to cars in stock, retail customers only, at participating Chrysler Plymouth dealers. So for a great rebate, plus a great deal on his entire lineup of fine cars, see your Chrysler Plymouth dealer today.